Okay, so we were talking there before 11 just about technical issues with permanent TSB. They said 3 days ago, which will be on Friday, that issues with payments for customers were now resolved. There was still some issue with the app, but apparently resolved, according to the Irish Independent and News Talk and Dublin Live and the Journal. Let's see what Daniel thinks, because he's also in the same boat, I think. Hi, Daniel.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for your email, buddy. So what's your what was your experience with permanent TSB?
So I was waiting for my wages to be paid in on Friday. Nothing came in, no word from the bank. Assumed it was just a technical issue, wait till later in the morning, still nothing. And then eventually by lunchtime, they put a notice up on their site saying, you know, a minority of customers have been affected. We're working to resolve it, and it'll be resolved by mid-morning. And then nothing. And then they're posting on their Facebook page that it's, you know, that it's all been resolved and that now there's problems with their app and all of that kind of stuff. And still no wages. And then they're blaming a third party SEPA payments, which is, I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's sort of European money transfers, and they're not the only bank affected. And then this went on over the weekend. I went into the branch to get some money out to pay some bills. And they said that I said that I'm very frustrated by this and I know it's not their fault. And they said that they were frustrated as well and that they weren't getting any updates from head office, what was being posted on social media. They were getting 10, 20 minutes later. Ended up speaking to somebody in customer service over the weekend and they assured me that it would be fixed by Monday, but still nothing. It's just this constant gaslighting that it had all been resolved and it's only a minority of people affected. But there seems to be an awful lot of people affected if you go on their social media.
Well, that's it, you see. We have two things going on here. We have the narrative from Permanent TSB, but the way things are nowadays, we have the reality, right? So you know your experience. You know that from social media and what have you, no other banks are suffering this issue with SEPA, and also the fact that it's not isolated, that lots and lots and lots of people still 3 days on from when they said it was fixed have yet to get their money, and the great inconvenience for many that causes.
Yeah, no, I think they kind of chose the wrong person to kind of gaslight. So I used to work in social media for a large insurance company when I lived in the UK.
Okay.
And you can't be going to people that there is no issue when there clearly is one. They'd been better to hold their hands up and go, look, something's gone wrong, it's complicated, it's going to take a while to fix. In the meantime, we'll do our best to resolve it. We'll make sure nobody's out of pocket. And I'm getting messages from my colleagues at the company that I work for who've got direct debits bouncing and they're getting charged by Permanent TSB for not having enough money in their accounts.
Yeah, and that's it. And we spoke to the other caller. Rather than them implementing a system that takes account of that, they're asking people to give up more of their time by opening some sort of a complaints process.
Yeah, and when I spoke to the customer service representative at the weekend, they were very dismissive. I'm like, okay, so we'll just mark your complaint as resolved then. It's like, no, I want to open a grievance kind of on this, and I want someone from the bank to come back to me and tell me, you know, what is wrong. I've emailed the Irish Independent this morning, and their journalist got back to me, and he's going back to Permanent TSB to find out actually how many customers are really affected.
Yeah, which would be the right thing to do once you've just received that email from the press release from the PTS Bank saying that everything's all right. You know, I don't think we should take everything we're given as granted. I'd have liked to have gone back to them and says, all right, okay, but how many's affected? How many are still affected? There's lots of questions. That's journalism, isn't it? Keep us updated with how that comes for you. I appreciate your time, Daniel. I think they took on the wrong fella, given your background in your company. They may live to regret that. But anyway, appreciate it, Daniel. And of course, you're advocating for others who don't necessarily start engaging. So that's good work you're doing there. That's Daniel Lane there. Brendan Devaney is going to be joining us shortly. We're going to be talking all things GAA and still talking about some big games and big results and big achievements, and us well into December now. Well, not well in, but into December. I had the same issue with PTSB app on Friday. My wages go in on a Thursday, and on Saturday morning I noticed that they'd paid my wages in again, but by Saturday evening they took that payment back out again. Sometimes you get ghost payments, and that can work to our advantage because you can return a payment before it actually is processed. So I'm not sure maybe your wages ever went in twice. Greg, where can I watch Pat the Cope being elected on your live video and being hoisted? I can't find it on your video. Thanks. I wasn't privy to what was being filmed. I think it was being filmed. It's possible maybe there was a dropout or something. Find out what... I don't know how to do that. We started broadcasting at quarter past nine yesterday. So you'd have to fast forward on the YouTube channel to get to that point, which I wouldn't fancy doing, not at this stage, because I probably have a little bit of too much election stuff. Hi, Greg. Just to let you know, I found a purse outside Lidl in Buncrana. I handed it into Lidl at the time. It's in there. Hopefully the person got it. Thanks. You may have made someone's day today, because I've in the past lost something and I don't know where I've lost it. And you trace your steps and you know you've been in five or six different places. If you were in Lidl and you lost your purse, it's in Lidl in Buncrana, by the way. A good citizen picked it up and handed it in. So if that's you, you'll know who you are. A very human thing to do, put your hand up and say that you were wrong. Well done, Nikki Bradley. A true measure of a good person. Well done, Nikki Bradley. Well done, Nikki Bradley. It takes a strong person to admit their mistake. Those are a series of messages that came in there. As it relates to our friend who applied for a grant 2.5 years ago and it wasn't forthcoming, he went ahead and adapted the house, but then got a call last week to say, how's this? Are you sorted now? And he was just highlighting that there's no real grant there at all for him because he couldn't have waited. A caller says, sounds like that man may be entitled to grant aid under housing adaptation grant administered by local authority. If you have €200 to employ a private occupational therapist to do a report, it would speed up the application immensely. Thanks so much for that feedback. He mentioned during the call that in the interim, he had to adapt the bathroom, and he did. Hi, Greg. Thanks for the coverage yesterday. Looking at the results of the election, the Redress Party have put in Charles Ward with the greatest respects, no experience, and they've put Thomas Pringle out, a TD with great experience, one of the TDs that was fighting our corner. I don't think we're any better off regards. That's up from Jerry. And that's how you feel, Jerry. But I mean, all that being said, you sit back and don't do anything, right? And then Thomas Pringle could have lost that to Noel Jordan, although Noel Jordan would argue he's part of a party that is that's pro 100 redress. But I mean, it's what ifs. It's what ifs. What are the ramifications? What are the ramifications if you didn't do it? It would be the status quo, effectively. Two government parties, two Sinn Féin and Thomas Pringle. So that would be exactly as you were. At least now they might argue that they have someone, although Thomas Pringle endorsed the People's Document, you do have someone now that who is directly affected by it, running for a party that was named because of the crisis. Is it as you were? I don't know. It's up to people to decide. We're both in our 70s and applied for new windows and doors. We paid for insulation ourselves, but were told that new windows might help. After a long time, an engineer came out and said that our windows were too good to replace. The windows were 38 years old. We appealed it, and another engineer came out. We are in our 50-year-old house. We tried to get a grant, and we were turned down because of this. I've not voted in the election for the first time in my life. We will never know why this wasn't granted. I'm so angry and frustrated. A county councillor did his best for us, but couldn't help us. And there's a reason. There's two votes. We talk about why people don't vote. Well, there's two people votes by their own admittance there. I want to give another quick mention, a final mention to our competition, just to make sure all of you who wish to enter do enter. The Cadbury Secret Santa is back, and we're going to be talking about it this week. It's 7 years, believe it or not, of the Cadbury Secret Santa, and it means that you can send someone a chocolate bar, anon. There are QR codes on special posters around the place. If you see one of those, scan it on your phone. They're giving away 22,000 bars across the country over the next wee while. And to celebrate this, we have two huge hampers of chocolate to give away, plus, that's at the end of the week, plus a €50 voucher every day to be won. And all we want you to do, really, is tell us why someone would deserve a bar of chocolate, and much more, because you could give them a €50 voucher if you wish. What have they done for you? How are they important in your life? Why would you send them? And it doesn't even have to be, you know, a heartbreak story. Maybe they're good fun or a friend or whatever it might be. You know yourself. So why would you give someone a free bar of chocolate and in turn, you might be able to give them a massive hamper. We've got two hampers, one for you, one for them, to give away at the end of the week, and €50 each day. All you have to do is text to WhatsApp 086 60 25,000.
The county's number one talk show, The 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio. The 9 Till Noon Show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, offering low-rate car loans with fast approval. Apply online at letterkennycu.ie or in office today.
Get your Christmas shopping sorted at McIlhenny's Department Store. With hundreds of top brands and trending products to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect gift for everyone on your Christmas list. From unique finds to seasonal favourites, shop online today or visit us in-store at McIlhenny's Bally Buffet.
Go full Lidl with our roast and toast pairings on Lidl Plus. Love every succulent slice of our Bord Bia-approved Irish round roast joint, 22% off, now €6.99. And a perfect pairing is our French Merlot, 20% off, now €7.99. Scan your Lidl Plus app and go full Lidl today. Get the facts, be drink aware, visit drinkaware.ie.
Your home is likely the most expensive decision you'll ever make. The Property Services Regulatory Authority is here to protect you. When you're bidding, buying or renting, should things go wrong with your auctioneer, sales or letting agent. So you can make sure that the most expensive decision you'll ever make doesn't end up costing you more than it should. To learn more about your PSRA consumer protections, visit psr.ie. A message from the Property Services Regulatory Authority.
GiveBlood.ie know we can count on you, our community of blood donors, to be there for others in their hour of need. Blood donors from Ballyshannon should attend the clinic in Coloshta Colum Kill in Ballyshannon on Monday 2nd of December. Donors from Killybegs should attend the clinic in St. Catherine's School in Killybegs on Tuesday 3rd, and donors from Donegal Town and Dunlow should attend the clinic in the Abbey Hotel in Donegal Town on Wednesday 4th and Thursday 5th. Making an appointment is recommended, so call 1-800-731-137 or visit our website to book your time. New donors are vital. Visit giveblood.ie to check eligibility and clinic details, because we count on you.
Shekalaha Ama Highland Radio. Arna Dortugat ag Airgrid. Ubror agus Vorbor ang Goletrahas na Hairn. Airgrid. Pobla Guaktu, Ira Aguaktu. Heshe.
11:15. Now, coming up this evening, just after 7 o'clock, there is the DL debate, and the presenter of it is Brendan Devaney. He's in studio with me now. Hi, Brendan. How are you getting on?
The very best. Can I give you a break from all the political chat?
Yeah, and indeed, we had a nice little break during the show yesterday, because Maureen joined us via Zoom from Park na Dunnamh as the Downing's ladies, and with a bit of comfort, it seems, made history. They reached the All-Ireland Junior Final with a win over the Leinster champions, Kilcock. What a result for them.
Unbelievable, Greg. Listen, I was down there on Saturday. There was a fundraiser.
They were the helicopter drop.
Helicopter, yeah.
So were you up in the helicopter?
I wanted to fly it, but they wouldn't.
But they let you in it?
They were on about me going up on it.
And?
And I was kind of comparing it, so...
This sounds like excuses.
I stayed grounded.
Yeah. That sounds like excuses.
The company I work for, we used to have a chopper and we used to go up and down to Dublin a little wee bit. But hey, I don't know, I got a wee bit spooked by it all then. I was happy enough staying on the ground.
I didn't get a call for anyway, so someone's won 25 grand and they got good funding for the floodlights there, didn't they? And you have to match that with local raised funding. So hopefully it was a huge success for them. And to follow that, a great buzz, I'm sure, because that was deferred, if I'm not mistaken, because of the progress of the Donegal, the Downing's ladies team.
Yes.
So it was a big weekend. You had that, and then you had this game, home advantage in a semi-final, an All-Ireland semi-final.
Massive. And as I say, the people down there were great, Greg. Listen, it's always great going to Downing's, as you know. The buzz about the place, Cookie and them had organised all that, but the girls were all there. I got talking to a few of them, a couple of wee interviews, kept the crack going. They were going out spiking the pitch where the balls would drop or whatever, so it was good having a bit of chat to them. But I mean, Greg, an All-Ireland final, I mean, that's the pinnacle of the club season, and for these girls, they made it as far as you said. It was 1-3-6 at half time, so Downing's obviously outscored 4-1 second half, and that's where the game is won. And listen, just dream world. I'll be chatting to Barney Kern later about the fair, and I think Mo might be on as well if I can reach out there. I was texting her last night. So, I mean, unbelievable place. They're playing the Limerick champions now, St. Paul's, Limerick and Munster champions in the All-Ireland final. And 2 weeks' time. I mean, what an occasion for the club.
It's a funny one too, because more so than at a lot of levels, you're going into these games completely blind, aren't you? Because of at this stage, people are from different ends of the country. I mean, you might find a video somewhere or other, but really, you're preparing for the unknown.
Yeah,
both teams.
That's it. And Greg, it's very hard to know. You look at a lot of sport there. You know, there's a certain level, and there's obviously, you know, in terms of teams playing each other and familiarity and who's got what, and you have a fair idea how games are going to go. But as you said, completely new territory for any of these teams playing each other. And there was a guy down from Kilcock actually on Saturday. He was down looking about. Now the pitch, I'd have to say, in fair play to the ground staff there, and we were talking to a couple of them, fantastic shape, and they've got the second pitch, which is going to be floodlit now as well. So everything was set up. Home advantage massive. I mean, you imagine them girls travelling up. I think they stay by Terry there at the Mount Errigal Saturday evening. And you know, you're coming a long way. You're out of your comfort zone. There's nothing like playing at home, Greg. So it was a huge advantage to Downing's, and you'd think that home crowd and that second half made it a good influence on that.
Yeah, it's momentum's an amazing thing. Both teams went in with momentum, but there's something going on in and around Downing's, I think. Fantastic stuff. Look forward to hearing the reaction to that. Apparently, a brilliant game. Four Masters are the under-21 championships. There's a whole load of new rules they're talking about to make football more attractive.
Yeah.
What new rules? You don't need that's them. That's right,
Greg. Listen, 100%. What a game yesterday. I mean, the crowd, brilliant crowd down here. Two teams very well supported. It was moved to down to Fowler Cherney Park and Bally Sound, just they were concerned about the weather. But, you know, the day, actually, there was a couple of showers, but by and large, conditions weren't too bad. There was a bit of a breeze, but two teams served up an absolutely fantastic game. I mean, Four Masters, like, they are the standard bearers at all underage, and now it's come through to under-21s. That was their first under-21 final in about 23 years, and I think the likes of Carrie Lacey and Big Durkin and Barry Dunyan and Doherty and these boys were involved. So that's how far it's come up the rankings. They've come to under-21s. The talent that they have, there's only two players overage next year, so they've already won it. Now, that said, Glenn Swilly, the heart and I suppose the courage that they showed in the game, because there's no doubt, and this is no disrespect to Glenn Swilly, this is like every team almost underage that plays Four Masters, there's so much talent on the other side, but they give it so much guts. They never lay down, and in fact, you know, they were three up at one stage in the second half, but Four Masters had 4 points in that period after it, went into a point lead. Glenn Swilly equalised, but then Four Masters hit the last 3 points of the game to pull away. But listen, what a game of football. And as you said, listen, this type of game, you would say, is a rule change needed. But of course,
we know that this is the exception and not the rule. This is a group of players that have come through and have been improving or maintaining and competing at the highest level now, as played out in winning this competition. The senior teams around the county need to be taking stock here, because these boys are coming.
They are, yeah. Listen, I was talking to a few of them after. I was like, what's the magic here? And I was talking away to talk to the management and a few of the players. And I actually met Josh McMullen as well, one of our 92 heroes. And, you know, some of them are on about different groups of players coming through. And it's not any one thing. It's not like there's some kind of miracle coaching or anything on. They were, you know, chatting to a few of the guys, you know, around the club. They were saying, listen, we've just got a real good focus. We happen to get a great bunch of crop of players together. I said, that's more a crop now, because they're dominating all underage. So if anything like this wave come through the senior, yeah, there's going to be certainly a new team or a new team coming back to the top again. And you couldn't say, Greg, with this much talent coming through, it's hard sometimes to take it through the seniors. But if you look at all the good teams around the country, and I think of even Glenn Mahara, like they won four minors in a row before that started to come through to senior, and there's different elements of that around the country, and certainly Four Masters, you couldn't see any way that they're not going to lift a Dr. Maguire in the coming years.
Yeah, the other 21B Championship, I think that was on Saturday, Clonmacnoise had a goal and 3 points to spare in their win over Burt, so great celebrations in that local community as well.
It's been a tough year for Clonmacnoise, yes, so listen, big boost to the club there. You know, they've had a tough time, seniors, you know, between injuries and players away and that. So listen, great to see something coming through. Well done to Burt as well, of course, making the final. They stayed up in the intermediate championship as well this year. So listen, two teams, listen, my dad had a game with Clonmacnoise, just that bit too strong. So say that club certainly needed that lift.
Super stuff. So there's an awful lot to get through. You've got great guests as well. Loads of reaction from the under 21 finals. You have reaction, of course, from the Downing's ladies football. There's sort of, I'm not elevating anyone over the other, right? But there's just something about Maureen's coverage I find
better than mine.
No, infectious. You're excellent as well. It's infectious.
Yeah. And she loves it.
And to be honest, between yourself and the rest of the team too, we're blessed with amazing. Because I used to do a bit of sports reporting, right? When I was at Northwest Rail, as it was, and I went to the Finn Harps games, and I loved it. Don't get me wrong, right? And I loved reporting on it, but I never played the game at any level. Mm. You know what I mean? Your GEA through and through, between playing, coaching, whatever. Maureen's the same, and we've got great others amongst our team, don't get me wrong. But that experience, that understanding of the emotions and the passion and the play, that's what elevates the likes of you and Mo up, you see.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you love it, Greg, I suppose it's one of, like anybody, if you have a passion for it or what you're doing here, if you like it, it kind of, it makes the whole thing roll because you're a bit more invested in it, yeah. I would say Niamh Patrick Muff, if they mention them, they're in Ryslip this weekend for the All Ireland semi. There's about 100 plus booked already, so wow, fair play to them.
That's a fantastic run. Yeah, it's a great story.
What a story heading away to Ryslip.
And you know what? In a way, it's nice that the deck's been cleared a little bit, and we can focus more on teams maybe that don't necessarily always get the push, but they don't always have the success either, and the push comes with success.
They do. Right, Cahill Keane's on with me as well.
I was just about to say that.
I don't know if you had known.
No, that's fine. He's from the Irish News.
He is.
Park Hilferty.
Park could be up. Yeah, Cahill's done a big interview with Jim. Now I'm waiting on Jimbo myself.
You're bringing him on to talk about an interview with Jim. Jim needs to come here.
He's on the pipeline.
I know you're privy to a fair bit, right? But what would be one question for that you're looking forward to sticking it to Jim, or do you want to keep your powder dry?
It's funny, that's one of the reasons I'm interested. Cahir had a few comments him about the change in nature of football. Does he take responsibility from it? Which is kind of someone from outside the county can ask that type of question. Yeah. Now, me, it's not that I'm not really interested
in that.
It's
not your angle.
Because I appreciate what the boys are doing, and I know why they have to do it and what they're doing from 2011 up until this time. So it's a different thing, like, because I was joking with him. He goes, you know, he thought maybe Jim would, the interview could be over quick. But I think some of them things people are talking about out there generally in Ulster. And I think that's the difference with Cahir. With me, I'd be more interested in his attitude, obviously, Dave Murphy coming back, you know, the new rules coming in, what he made of the end for the Galway game. And the thing about it is, I suppose when he looked at 2011, you know, we won Ulster in 2011 and got the All-Ireland semi. But he was very much, he knew what did he do going into 2012. It was that explosive counter-attack play that we didn't get right against Dublin.
Yeah.
Whereas this time, not only you have to muse over what happened against Galway, you also have this tsunami of new rules coming in. So it's such a different world. But listen, we've got a man that knows his tactical mastermind. So I think he'll make the best of these new rules, and the likes of Murphy coming back. It'll be a good news story.
We can look forward to that. Tonight, we have reaction with Brendan to all of the weekend's action, as we've just been talking about. Park Hilferty is going to be in studio, and also the Irish News GEA columnist Carlo Kane will be joining us via video. Brendan, it's live after 7 and available for you to podcast very soon thereafter. Okay, just another mention of one of two great competitions we've got running on the show today. It's in association with our friends at the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa, and it's a chance for you to win this week a Pamper Me Please package worth €130. It's a 2.5 hour spa package, and it includes a pressure point foot massage, a snooze room relaxation, giving you time for refreshments, stress relieving back massage, and so on and so forth. And to be in with a chance of winning this great prize on Friday, just answer this question. Which Christmas song mentions a one-horse open sleigh? Is it A, Jingle Bells, or is it B, White Christmas? All you have to do, it's the same with the other competition we're running, all you have to do is text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 08660 25000. All right, and good luck if you're entering. As many as you... As many as... Moving on. Hi, Greg. Congratulations on the team's continued coverage from start to end that kept people watching worldwide. Just 3 hours today. Phew. And maybe John McAteer will get a book out of this Glasher Goes To. One of the staggering results was that Sherlock won over The Criminal yesterday. And is Pat trying to break Ellen DeGeneres' Oscar tweet? Now, that Jim McGuinness, maybe Michael Murphy and Pat's back too, and Charlie Mack's back on radio. Can they cope with it all? And you get to see Charlie McConlogue one more time and hopefully not the last time to congratulate them. Even though it sounded like he was lecturing you how to listen to people, let's hope they're all listening this time. Kevin, thanks very much indeed thanks very much indeed for that. Right, okay. Let's say good morning now to John Kilgariff. It's part of our Monday Focus. How are you getting on, John? Thanks so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Nice to speak to you.
Okay. Now, you're a counsellor with the Male Advice Line with the Men's Development Network, and your campaign is about amplifying men's silent struggles. So what can you tell us about that? I mean, is it relative or are there commonalities amongst men around the country that they suffer in silence?
Absolutely. I work on the Male Advice Line, and it's a service that we provide nationwide, free phone service to support men experiencing abuse. It is very important for men to speak out, and we're finding the numbers increasing from year to year, but it's still very important to get that message out there that the service is there for men, and that, again, that suffering in silence can be changed.
Do you think it takes a while for men to realise that they are experiencing domestic abuse, you know, before they even maybe start considering seeking help?
Absolutely, that would be our experience here within the service. And again, it's something that often can be minimised as well, because if the violence is not physical, for example, or psychological or coercive control, it can be minimised, and then only the effects over a long period of time. You'd often speak to men here where this could be 10, 15, 20 years, and it's the cumulative effect of that and how it impacts then on physical and mental health.
So when we talk about domestic violence, I think often people, and I would imagine it's people that aren't directly affected by this or don't have knowledge of it, John, would instantly go to physical violence. And you've already sort of referenced this in your comments beforehand. So, you know, domestic abuse is a catch-all for a lot of different types of experiences for people. So can you go through some of those for us and what we see most commonly?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, physical violence is present, but also it can be emotional, psychological, neglect. We'd often speak to men here that would be talking about, you know, being frightened, intimidated, looking for some peace. Again, you could be isolated again from friends, family, suffering constant criticism, being put down. An expression we'd often hear is about walking on eggshells. It could be financial abuse as well. It can come across even elder abuse, or again in situations where with the changes in society, that children are spending longer time at home as well. Mm. And again, it can be things like mocking, threatening, putting you down in front of other people. And this, as I said, can be minimised, but in reality, when you talk with this for a long, long time, that's where the effects become really, really serious, especially in mental health.
Now, some might say, right, this sounds like, for much of what you're talking about, this sounds like you're in a bad relationship. What are you doing there? But it's not that simple, is it, to just walk away or even to recognise what's going on?
Correct. And that would be one of the things, to recognise what is going on, and it says about making those changes. And especially, it can be a lot of factors such as, you know, financial situation, living at home, be that the effects on children or afraid to leave for them issues. And again, it is the importance then to recognise, well, you know, because a lot of the time by the nature of abuse at home, it is what goes on at home and isn't spoken about outside the home. So it is those things. Or again, sometimes men will have other people who will speak to them, family members, friends will come and say, well, you know, we're noticing these things about you, and it's to listen to that as well.
And it's about really having the conversation as well, John, because my experience of this, we do talk about domestic violence targeting males regularly in this programme. But often the only time I hear from it from listeners is when we are talking about specific issues as it relates to domestic violence against women. And I understand why people do that, because people who've maybe been have experience of it or what have you, all of a sudden they go, well, I'm going to text in because men experience domestic violence well. And it's difficult because I'm talking about women's plights, and then it becomes this sort of competition between, well, it's women and men. I think it's important, too, that people sort of advocate for themselves and the likes of what you're doing today, John, separate sometimes, you know what I mean? It needs to be discussed not in the context that it also happens, but as a standalone issue. And I think once we're more comfortable in breaking through those conversations and speaking about it, not just in the context of it happening to women, I think the more the conversation's had, the more we reach people, if that makes sense. Convoluted, it's been a long weekend, John, but I do hope you understand what I'm saying.
I understand. No, and that summed it up very well, Greg. It is important because when you support, again, the individual, you're also supporting a partner, a family, and it is not a competition between everybody that will come forward as experienced abuse deserves support and respect, regardless of their gender. And again, a lot of the calls we would take again would be, again, same-sex relationships as well, where it is male violence perpetrated on men as well. So again, it's the message for people for reaching out. And again, with men as well, that, you know, the service will also take a lot of calls from other concerned members, be that a brother, a sister, a mother, daughter, etc. So it is about reaching out to people rather than a competition between anybody.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of domestic violence generally, it's... And this is why I think it's important we let people know there are lines like this to happen. It's hard to talk about because, you know, maybe if it's a fella and they talk to their friends, they might feel that it makes them less male or what have you. If they start talking to family members, they're concerned that maybe they can patch it up with their partner, but that sort of toxic notion of their partner would persist. So in other words, there's lots of reasons why you don't talk to people close to you. And I'm not saying one shouldn't. But I would say a lot of people ring the male advice line, actually, just to say, this is what I think I'm experiencing here. Is this normal? Should this be happening? Is this domestic violence? I mean, obviously, physical violence is very obvious, right? But the other stuff sometimes can be less obvious. And I think a lot of the time it's just talking it through and validating feelings.
That is for sure. It's very true. And especially that first point of contact as well, of picking up the phone and making that call or reaching out, how important that is. And again, anyone that you're going to speak to working on this line will have experience of that. We'll talk you through this. The service is confidential as well. And it is, just as you said there, it's trying to make sense of an experience as well, because it's easy to think, look, I've been experiencing this for a long time. Isn't this just the way things are? Look, she's a bit controlling, things like that. But it's that change or life not continuing to be how that has been for a long, long time, and where that can start to be changed is very important.
Yeah, and I think it's important too, if people do make that call, that it is it's a listening ear, it's a safe space, it's non-judgmental, because I'm sure... it's the same. Well, I'm sure, because I've spoken to an awful lot of people, that sometimes people start trying to mitigate the actions of others in a conversation, if you know what I mean, because it's probably human nature. But you're familiar with all of that. That's all been done before. Every situation is unique, but there's also a broad commonality across it too. And you've got experience of all of that. So how do people get in touch? What's the best way to communicate with the male advice line?
Well, the line, as I said, the male advice line is a national free phone service. And it operates over 50 hours a week, and that'd be over 365 days a year also. And the number that people can reach us on is 1-800 816588. And you can also contact us through our website, which is mensnetwork.ie.
Okay, listen, thanks very much for your time, John. I do appreciate it. Keep up the great work there. That's John Kilgariff, who's a counsellor with the Male Advice Line with the Men's Development Network. And a caller says, actually, straight in off the back of that, 100% correct on the discussion around abuse not needing to be a competition. It's mad that some people try to twist it like that. I'm sorry, I'm not criticising what you're saying. I don't think there's anything malicious in it. It's just that I think when people have been, when males have been the victim of domestic violence and they hear what seems like much more coverage of females being the victims of domestic violence, there's a natural human reaction to say, look, you don't get it, it happens to men too. But we get that. But we don't need to compete. It's not like, well, men... because then what happens is right, it makes out that you're sort of... the women that we're talking about, it makes out that you're bringing them down and elevating. We don't need to do that. We can address it all and recognise that it happens across the board, very sadly. By the way, I'm not reading them all, but we have been inundated with very kind wishes as it relates to our coverage at the weekend of the general election. And we really, really appreciate it, by the way. And we got lots of it yesterday as well. And it's really outstanding because we all enjoy what we do. We really do. And it's a passion as well as a job. Absolutely outstanding coverage, Greg, and all at Highland Radio. Congratulations to all. Huge congratulations to Charles Ward. But keep a lid now. Our redress councillors have been quiet since elected. Let's see you guys roll up the sleeves now and achieve an end-to-end scheme inclusive of community buildings. Let's see a shortened waiting list of DCB testing, regulation of materials and of the scheme so that it's being administered fairly and not making contractors rich. Let's see reduced waste in the scheme, appliances, etc., and all furniture being sold on Facebook as they won't match new decor as there are storage allowances. That needs tightening up. So that's all from one person there. Hi, Greg and team. Great coverage all weekend. Thank you. That comes in from Brian Kelly. Thanks, Brian. Hi, Greg. Can I just pass on my congratulations to all the newly elected TDs from Donegal, but especially to Charlie McConnell Logue. Objectively, his campaign was subjected to a level of personal abuse that I've never seen before. Well done to him for returning with a strong mandate and to them all on a very hard fought election. Where did Pat the Cope get all his young supporters from? You engage, don't you? Listen, any candidate that wants to be successful is going to have to engage young people. But from yesterday, lots of people had lots of young supporters as well. You need to engage young people and bring them forward. Well done, Nicky Bradley. We all make mistakes, says Emma. Charlie has worked very hard for Inish Owen and Donegal in general. Hope he gets a job in the next government. I wish him well. That comes in from a Malin Fine Gael supporter. Hi, Greg. Can I just pass on my congratulations? Okay, just read that one. Hi, Greg. I'm glad that Charlie Ward got elected for Redress Party and he sounds coherent and level-headed. I'd imagine he could work with Minister McConnell Logue and the powers that be. Some of the vitriol spoken by some of his colleagues over the last while has been disgusting and it would not be easy to sit down and talk to some of those to have satisfactory outcomes to this defective bloc's disaster for the people of our county. We actually do have amazing natural resources, Greg, fishing, which benefits everyone. But my point was, where do you sell that? I'm not arguing with Charlie earlier on. I'm not dismissing what he's saying. If we're going to have real conversations about we need to do what Donald Trump and make Ireland great again, we also do have to talk about how we do that. You know, I'm not going to sit here and like some people on, particularly on the live stream, want just sit there and go, oh, yeah, yeah. How does that happen? You know, how does leaving the EU help us when it didn't help Britain? You know, if we have more access to our seas, is that how it works? Where do we sell the fish to? Do we sell it enough to sustain the fishing industry? Can the farming industry in this country survive on the open competitive market without the grants from the EU? Genuinely, can it? I don't know. A lot of the people I know in farming wouldn't be at it if they weren't getting support. That's something we realistically have to talk about. In terms of tourism, you know, what would our product be and how could we grow that? And would we still be seen as an attractive place to stay? What if we have our own currency and it becomes quite strong against the euro? You know, would that discourage people coming to visit here? When the dollar is weak, we do see a fall off on numbers when the pound is weak. We don't get as many people from Northern Ireland to County Donegal. These are all facts, right? So we can't just, if we're going to talk about those things seriously, let's have the conversation. But your view has to be challenged so we can tease it out and formulate a plan if that's what you want. There's plenty of elections. We are joined on the programme by Karen Matvanko Silkar. My apologies, Karen, if I haven't pronounced that correctly. I tried my best, I swear.
Thanks very much, Greg. So it's Matvienko Sikar, but I'm used to the unusual pronunciation.
You're used to Egypt's like me making a mess of your beautiful name. My apologies. You are a senior lecturer, of course, at School of Public Health, University College Cork. And we're talking about research, and it was carried out amongst a group of 214 pregnant women and 486 mothers of babies under the age of two. And what were some of the findings that you feel important, Karen, to talk about?
So specifically in this study, we were looking at the perinatal mental health support experiences and support needs of these women. So what kind of things influence their perinatal mental health? So things like stress and anxiety during pregnancy and up to 2 years after they've had their baby. And what do they feel that they need to better support it? So we identified a number of factors that were associated with poor perinatal mental health. So these were things like people perceiving that they had poor levels of social support from those around them. If they reported that they had low levels of resilience, so kind of felt that they couldn't really bounce back from adversity. When women have pregnancy complications or birth complications, this can lead to adverse psychological outcomes. And similarly, and unsurprisingly, the health of the child was tied to it as well. In addition to that, so we had women kind of fill out questionnaires on those kind of factors, but they also spoke to us and told us what they thought. Some of the things that came out in the kind of responses that we got were around challenges around balancing their responsibilities of either becoming a new mom or a mum to another child, around kind of meeting their child's needs, that there were challenges around accessing an awareness of the types of supports that were there for them, and kind of how to get referred to services or even if services existed. And again, social support came out time and time again as being the most important factor for them. And they felt that what they really need is more supports within their healthcare system, so that it's not a case of, you know, what they said to us a lot was that when they're pregnant, there's a lot of focus on them mm-hmm. and the baby. And then as soon as the baby's born, the mothers are kind of off you go, left to your own devices. So, and they kind of felt that particularly in that postpartum period, they needed more help than they get.
And I wonder too, given the fact that overall anxiety was the most common condition. I mean, obviously, we're all going to have feelings, right, in various situations. But I'm talking about how we can fix it and support mums better. Do you think a lot of it is them? I mean, it's a real feeling, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it is punishing themselves because of maybe what is portrayed as societal norms or the perfect pregnancy or the perfect mother, you know, maybe what we're exposed to on social media or on TV shows or what have you. I'm not questioning for a second that women aren't intelligent enough to weed out what's real and what's not real, but I think there's a lot of pressure to come out of hospital or even to travel through your pregnancy and be full of beans and full of energy and full of happiness and hope when you've had the baby. And so that's not necessarily a reality for many people.
No, and that's absolutely correct. So, and that's what the women in this study told us as well, that there is this perception of what a good, in inverted commas, pregnancy is, or what it means to be a good mom. And that's this societal pressure that they get from people around them, you know, who may mean well, but that they also get from the media and particularly from social media.
And can
as
I
well.
Give you an example of that, Karen, if you don't mind? Because even in, we do it with the best of intentions, but even if we do a, even if we do a, an information piece about promoting breastfeeding, I know from some new mums, it's horrible because it doesn't work for them for many different reasons. And even though that's a nice constructive conversation and to encourage those that can to do so, it does make a new mum feel like they're not doing what they should be doing or something. So that's how simple it can be to get these to feed these emotions.
Absolutely. And that's a great example because we do a lot of work actually on early infant feeding, including breastfeeding. And we speak with a lot of mums who tell us that exact thing, particularly around breastfeeding. So as soon as they, you know, for whatever reason may stop breastfeeding, that they feel like they're not given any further support or information around how best to feed their infants, and almost kind of like, OK, well, you didn't do that well. So, you know, you're kind of almost written off, which is what some of the mums would tell us. So, and it's across the board. There's so many of these little things. And I think for a lot of mums, they feel like they can't disclose that they're feeling these kinds of pressures or that they're experiencing difficulties because you're expected to kind of just get on with it and be able to do it. So we got that from a lot of the mums in this study, that they kind of came back and said, we just felt like we were completely isolated. We couldn't speak to anybody about how we were feeling and we didn't know where to go to get the help that we needed.
Many people listening today will have been told that they have a high risk pregnancy. And when you get that information, you think it's very, very rare that you're 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 2,000. And the words are stark, and maybe they have to be stark, of course. And I just wonder maybe if this feeds into some of the anxiety and elsewhere. Being told you have a high-risk pregnancy is actually really quite common.
Yeah, so it is. It's very common. It was very common in this study, actually. We had a lot of women who experienced high-risk pregnancy take part. And I think from our research and other research that's been done internationally, I think it's kind of tied to this idea of that you feel like you lose some of the control over what then is going to happen to you as part of your pregnancy. And that's a very common experience for women. And it kind of makes it a more medicalized pregnancy as well, because you have increased checkups and increased visits, which are all needed and they're great and they're looking after the baby. But I think for a lot of women, that kind of ties into that removal from them and how they're processing and progressing. And one of the things that we found in this study actually was particularly after adverse birth experiences. So maybe if somebody needed an emergency cesarean section or another type of intervention that they weren't expecting, that if there were reflective kind of birth sessions or kind of reviewing and explaining what happened to the women and why it happened, because in the moment you don't really realize what's happening and things move quite quickly.
Yes.
But having these reflective time with your healthcare professionals afterwards was actually a huge benefit and a resource to women, because it helped them to process what happened as well.
Yeah.
Because often we're kind of, these things happen, or we're told you're a high-risk pregnancy or this may or may not happen. And that's kind of it. So it's that additional information, that additional support and that consideration.
Yes. And it's also dealing with that too after you've had the baby. Say, for instance, one of those complications was gestational diabetes. Often, you know, people's blood levels can return to perfectly normal, but you might be told that your child has a greater risk of obesity, or that you might have a greater risk of diabetes into the future, or in preeclampsia with high blood pressure. Many new moms might end up having, some won't, many won't, many will. I don't know what the scenario is, but we'll have to deal with high blood pressure potentially after the birth of a baby. And they're probably not conversations they want to have with their partners or family at the time. So it could be a tough time, can't it? Because that's also stuff that may affect mom and baby after the fact. I'm not trying to startle anyone, but I hope you understand the point I'm trying to make, Karen.
Yes, absolutely. And we actually have an excellent PhD student, Elizabeth Badunde, in the School of Public Health, who's working on the long-term effects, or examining the long-term effects of pregnancy complications and birth complications on women's mental health up until the child is about 12. And we're seeing that it can have lasting effects, some of these interventions. So, you know, again, not to startle anybody, but these things can happen. And often I think, you know, there's an absence of the conversation about it. And without the conversation and the awareness, people don't then know to seek help.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, there's this feeling that postnatal depression only affects you immediately after the baby's born and for a short period of time. You know, when that's not the case. And that's why it's important to have studies like this. And I think it's always good to feel that you're not the only one. I think new mums or pregnant mums can read through this report and realise that, oh, right, that's me. And maybe I can, if I need some supports or whatever, that would be really useful. Karen, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Take care of yourself. All right, bye-bye. That's Karen Matvanko-Sikar, and she is a senior lecturer at the School of Public Health, University College Cork. That's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you so much to all of you who text in on various issues. But listen, we're not going to live off the memory of the election forever. But I just want to say a big final thank you to all of you who have listened and watched the show over the last couple of days, and the team here who worked tirelessly. It has to be said. But you know what is amazing about you guys out there in the comments? It's that you know, maybe I was, my face was on the screen more than others, or maybe John or Paddy or whomever it might be. But you always recognise the team it actually takes to keep the show on the road, which is very encouraging that you have an understanding of that. Okay, let me see. I'm going to announce the Cadbury winner tomorrow. I want to read it tomorrow. It is from Sarah and family, right? But I'm going to read the story because it's a nice little message there, and we'll kick off with that tomorrow morning. You know, try and stay positive and all that jazz. That's the Cadbury's winner. She's won a 50-euro voucher and goes into a draw for two hampers on Friday. Have a great day, everyone. Stay tuned. Jean Curran's up around the northwest for John after we take a break for the news, and that's it.